Some brands offer you low finance, or cashback, or servicing.
Renault don't do ors. We do ands. The Renault Kadjar, with 1.91% APR and €1,000 cashback and 3 years servicing, saving you thousands. Renault, the brand with the ands. Visit your local Renault dealer. Finance is made under a hire purchase agreement. Terms and conditions apply. Deposit required, subject to lending criteria. See Renault.ie.
I remember one time my boss's friend said, you know, it's a really good thing you got a cute skirt working on your desk. I think I was 23 at the time. It was easy for me to kind of brush aside of, A, this is pervasive everywhere at this company, along with probably every other talent agency. I mean, if I want to keep going forward in this industry, I need to put up with it, right? It's just kind of what normal behavior is. And then one day, I don't know what happened, but I actively remember this. I kind of just sat at my desk and I said, I can't take this anymore. So I walked into my boss's office and I closed the door, looked him in the eye, and I said to him, those comments that you constantly make with your friends about how I look end today. I want a career in this industry and no one will take me seriously if you constantly say that.
That is our secret Hollywood insider, known only as Steph. We chatted with her this week to catch up on what's been going on in Hollywood 1 year after all of the big Harvey Weinstein allegations broke out.
This is The Gentenot, the podcast where we untangle the new masculinity and femininity. I'm Naz Trantavakolifar, or Naz in short.
I'm Daniel Carroll, or Dan in short.
I would love to see the entertainment industry more closely reflect what society actually looks like, especially in a city as diverse as LA. That is what I feel like would be a place to strive towards. Not necessarily like going halfway or going, you know, from 1 to 1,000. It's, can we just make it a little bit more reflective of what actual society looks like?
Welcome to The Gendernaut, the podcast where we try to figure out new gender roles for the modern era. So Dan and I are going to try and figure everything out, basically.
That's the deal. And, you know, I think that people need to know a little bit more about us in order to know why it matters what we think. And we were talking about this before. And, you know, one thing this show constantly touches on is men and their feelings. And I was just thinking that we never actually hear Naz's feelings on anything. Like, sometimes you get mad, but that's not really a feeling.
No, I feel like I'm pretty... Oh, no, now I feel like you're saying I'm not open. And I'm, like, accusing men of being bad with feelings because you think I'm bad with my feelings.
I don't think you're bad with your feelings. I think you might be a robot. I think you don't have feelings.
Dude, don't say that. This is actually really upsetting. I feel like we're actually probably having, like, it's not like nice beef territory. It's like actually, it's actually getting personal.
I don't mean it.
It's actually personal. Or maybe like because I'm British and you're being all like, I don't know, you're being like oversharey and American. Which is something you guys do, like an oversharing American.
Yeah, well, yeah. No, I think I know what it is. I think it's because you're a journalist with a microphone, and that is the one time in your life when you're not supposed to feel anything.
Yeah, maybe.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like we talk all the time outside of the show, and there's all kinds of stuff there, real depth. But then when you get on the show... You're like, I am a journalist. I went to school or whatever you say.
And like, the reporty side comes out or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, well, I'll be non-reporty. I actually don't have a notebook and a pen with me, which is unusual because I always have a notebook and a pen. Even if I'm talking on the phone to a friend, it's like second nature. Like, I always just have like, I just take notes.
Do you know who says things like that?
No.
Robots.
No, it's total second nature because I'm so used to it that I just take notes. And recently I was interviewed by someone and I was just taking notes. So I gave him the notes. I was like, here, would you like to have these?
Yeah, I noticed you were unprepared for this interview.
He hadn't done many interviews at that stage, so I think he found them super helpful.
You just spoiled him for the rest of his career. Every interview from now on, he's going to be like, wait a minute, I thought you people were supposed to take notes.
Dan, what about you? What's going on in your emotional life?
In my emotional life? That's a really good question. I don't know. I might sue a hospital.
Oh, wow. Why?
Because there's been jerks about my spine tumors.
Oh, no. Is it making you emotional?
Yeah, sometimes I get pretty wound up about it, but...
Do you just get angry, though? Because that's like...
No.
That's like the one male emotion, right? Is to get angry.
So there's a couple, but they all stem from the same place, which is helplessness.
Oh,
like that's the root of male emotion, right? And it either turns into like rage or fear or, sometimes something constructive. But for the most part, we start at helpless. And that's where I am in this situation. You know, I've been passed around to a few different doctors in this area since moving to LA. And it's just been really frustrating. I feel like people don't listen to me. People don't seem to care about certain things related to like the nerve damage that's come as a result.
Helplessness. Okay, two things. Now I feel like you're going to be like, oh, Naz is being reportery and I've not taken any notes.
No, please.
But two things. One is interesting because I literally this week I just did a doc for the BBC on why women have taken to wellness. Meditation and like healthy eating and stuff. And like, it's largely women who are very much into all that stuff. And so basically we uncovered that it's largely because doctors don't really listen to women when they talk about having pain. Like women's pain is often really dismissed and that there isn't a lot of research about illnesses that women suffer from.
Interesting.
It's very easy to dismiss like, oh, meditation and yoga and this is all ridiculous. But in a way, I was quite impressed that so many women are taking things into their own hands. So instead of like, you know, the doctors aren't listening to them and them going off and suffering, thinking, hey, you know what? I have to find something that helps. So that was kind of really interesting. But it reminded me of what you were saying as well. But because of this thing of helplessness, I don't know if this is a bit of a male thing of like, it's not okay to ask for help. Because I feel like this comes up with guys in my life as well, where sometimes you feel like they just don't know what to do and they don't know how to ask.
I think, you know, a feeling of like being confounded by helplessness is just human. But I think that men typically, or at least more often, react to that feeling with aggression.
Or with like, I'm fine, I don't need anyone or anything.
Like the animal instinct comes out where like you put a raccoon in a corner, you know what I mean?
Right.
And it's gonna unleash some shit.
Well, okay, I'm thinking of the women in this doc I did where it was kind of like, one of the guests, she was a medical doctor, right, who was saying how often with women's illnesses, like with chronic women's illnesses, what is normal in the US, because she was American, she was saying that what is quite normal is that women will have to see 5 different doctors and it takes them 5 years to get a diagnosis. But it is interesting to think that these women keep on persevering and then they're looking for other alternative ways of treating themselves. So that's kind of a way of not giving up, which I was like, oh, you know, people dismiss this kind of like women into yoga and eating and whatever. I was kind of quite proud of a lot of women after making that. I was like, yeah, they're not taking no for an answer. They're not being like dissuaded by their doctors. And they're like, no, I have to find something.
Meanwhile, I have just stopped trying to fix anything and I'm threatening a lawsuit.
Actually, in a sense, that might not be a bad plan, though. Because like,
no, I think it's a great plan.
That's like long-term structural change, right? If that then forces the medical establishment to have to change.
Right. And that's what I told him. I was like, you know, I don't want to get lawyers involved, but it seems like that's probably the only way you guys ever make any changes around here.
Yeah. Also, you sound proper American, but right now, being like, I'm getting lawyers.
Yeah, well, my parents are lawyers, so I can really tune that one up when I want to. Let's get down to housekeeping.
So we want to hear from men. Well, we want to hear from everyone, but especially from men who are feeling confused about what's going on, especially because I think women, we're giving a lot of mixed messages, and we're going to talk about that later on in this episode. I feel like women are giving a lot of mixed messages, and on this podcast I give a lot of mixed messages too. So I think sometimes men are like, wait, what do women want us to do? I don't understand. So yeah, we're really keen on hearing from men who are just feeling very confused or frustrated right now. So yeah, write to us. We're at thegendernot@gmail.com or go to our website, thegendernot.com. You can write to us there. Again, like constructive writing. We don't want to get like, just like, I don't know, like you guys suck or whatever.
Yeah, write to us. And you could also give us some money. We have a Patreon. We are accepting all kinds of money because it's not free for us to sit around and think of all this stuff to say to you. And it's not free for us to, you know, buy the equipment that we need to produce it. And we do have other co-producers who spend countless hours editing and tweaking audio and stuff like that so that this thing comes out every week.
Shout out to Sam and Johnny, who do a wicked job every week.
But you can go to our Patreon. There's a link in the notes, and you can pledge some money.
Wicked. And also, we want to give a shout out to our friends, the fantastic podcast Ministry of Ideas. So they are a podcast out of Harvard Divinity School, and they're doing a wicked conference. So it's called Sound Education. It's between the 1st to the 3rd of November. So it's a conference for people who are interested in educating the masses via audio. And they've got some fantastic speakers. So they've got Dan Carlin, who's the host of Hardcore History. They've got Christina Tucker. She's the host of Unfriendly Black Hotties. They've got Nate DiMaio of The Memory Palace. So they've just got all these wicked guests. So, like, yeah, if you're really into podcasts and if you're really into, like, changing the world or, like, spreading a lot of good ideas via podcasts, then definitely check it out. We have linked to it in the notes to this show.
All right. On to today's episode. I had the chance a couple weeks ago now to sit down with a Hollywood producer. We're only going to call her Steph. We're not going to actually use her full name because we do make reference to some of her career opportunities and some people that she's worked with along the way. And if she eventually wants to name some names in public, that's her business, but it's not ours. So we're going to keep that kind of low profile. One thing to mention, I do bring up my other podcast, Fine and Dandy with Dan and Andy, at some point in the episode. So that's what I'm saying when I say the word fine and dandy. It's a podcast. It's not just a weird saying I have.
And it's wicked. And Dan and I met through, actually, because a friend of mine sent it to me and was like, you've got to check out these dudes.
You've got to check out these white dudes.
Got to check out these straight white guys.
Yeah. And then we'll be back afterward to kind of touch on what Naz was just saying a minute ago about all of the confusing messages that might be coming your way. So stick around.
My first job out of college was I worked as an assistant to a producer to a reality TV show. And then from there, I worked as an assistant at a talent agency.
Okay.
Which was the worst experience, but also was good in the sense of it got me the experience to kind of realize, like, oh shit, this is what working in entertainment's like. And there's parts of it that are really terrible.
What was terrible about it?
The late hours. This was pre kind of the industry realizing that working your assistants and screaming at them and throwing things at them was a bad idea. But I was there for 12 hours a day, and it was absolutely the kind of setting where you could see agents like throw things at their assistants. Yeah.
Did things get thrown at you?
No. I got along really well with my boss, so it was fine. So yeah, even though it was kind of a shitty place to work just because it wasn't the best in terms of morale and just in terms of what was going on there, learned a lot in terms of what business deals were getting made and stuff, which was kind of cool. And from there, I got a job working at a studio, working in their legal department, which was also cool because then I got to see the deals getting made on the other side. And then from there, I jumped into production. I started off as an assistant to the head of production, and then I jumped into, you know, actually working on productions.
Nice.
From there, I, you know, kind of did a couple TV shows and features, and then from there, I moved back into studio management. So that was my last gig, was working as kind of a, I guess, kind of like a junior exec.
I mean, obviously, this is the gender knot.
Yes.
And we talk about, you know, gender-specific topics. I think what we want to dive into with this one is kind of like, you've got a fairly substantial career going in Hollywood behind the scenes,
right?
Which seems to be a hotbed of, you know, wrongdoing, so to speak. Are there any experiences that you've had in the past that have kind of like stuck out to you? Maybe at the time it didn't seem like, you know, this is necessarily crazy chauvinism or, you know, sexism or anything like that.
Yeah.
But maybe now looking back, you're like, holy shit.
So when I was working at a talent agency and I was an agent's assistant, from what I've heard, it's gone a little bit better in terms of what the atmosphere is like at agencies. But the stereotype I would say about it is that it felt like I was working at a 24/7 frat house. There's very few females there. There's very few people of color. if you've seen Entourage, it's exactly what it's like. I was Lloyd. But except with the fact that my boss and I actually got along and still get along. But there is actually one experience that comes into mind where it was a very open secret that all of the agents, who were all predominantly male, would talk about cute interns or cute mailroom girls or whatever mm-hmm. that would walk by, or they would want a cute mailroom clerk or cute sure. assistant on their desks. And I remember a couple months into that gig getting, you know, comments from my boss and from his friends being like, you look good today, or, you know, blah, blah, blah. Went, that's fine. That's, you know, sure. like a normal compliment, right, that right. you give to your boss. But then I kind of just put that aside and remember thinking, okay, some of these are genuine compliments. Mm-hmm. And then some of them just always rubbed me the wrong way. And it was just always the way that they would say it. I remember one time my boss's friend said, you know, it's a really good thing you got a cute skirt working on your desk. I think I was 23 at the time. It was easy for me to kind of brush aside of, A, this is pervasive everywhere at this company, along with probably every other talent agency. I mean, if I want to keep going forward in this industry, I need to put up with it, right? It's just kind of what normal behavior is. And then one day, I don't know what happened, but I actively remember this. I kind of just sat at my desk and I said, I can't take this anymore. So I walked into my boss's office and I closed the door, looked him in the eye, and I said to him, those comments that you constantly make with your friends about how I look end today. I want a career in this industry and no one will take me seriously if you constantly say that. And to his credit, he apologized and it didn't happen again. And I bring this up actually because with the whole Me Too movement that's sure. been happening, I think I had lunch with him in June and he brought it up. He brought up that moment and he said, with all this Me Too stuff that's been happening, that's been the one incident that he remembers, that I was the one assistant that stood up to him, and that he never did it again because he remembered it.
To any other assistant?
To any other assistant.
Oh, so he is dodging bullets left and right yeah. in 2018.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah. But he told me, actually, like, when that whole thing happened, that was the one incident he remembered, because he was so shocked that I just went into his office and just said it.
And you kept your job.
And I kept my job.
Wow.
Listen, there have been other instances that I can tell you about where I haven't been as bold mm-hmm. when things have happened to me, because this is the industry and other things have happened to me. But I feel like there was already a level of comfort with my boss mm-hmm. and I already knew that he liked me as a person. He liked sure. me because I was a competent assistant for him. And I think that really helped in my favor of thinking to myself, oh, well, you know, I'm going to win regardless because he already likes me as for the job that I do. I feel like looking back, there was a risk, but I feel like the risk was kind of dampened by that fact that I knew we had a good relationship. And I had a feeling he would take it well. There have been other instances where I didn't say anything. And this is not me pointing fingers at another woman for not speaking up.
Right.
Because their circumstances probably weren't nearly as comfortable as mine were.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it sounds like it took a lot to get to that point.
Yeah.
Even with yeah. somebody that you had a good relationship
totally,
with.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes I have these conversations with people and it's just, it's so mind blowing. I've never been put in a place where I have to accept something in order to keep the other things that I want. As an adult, no one has ever put me in a position where I have to put up with things.
Yeah.
Certainly not things that are based on, you know, parts of who I am
yeah, yeah,
that
yeah.
I can't control.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe I have a colleague I don't like or whatever, but like.
Right. I mean, we all have.
That's completely different.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And it's just I can't even imagine. You know, sitting through that day after day after day after day.
I definitely do feel like there is just a certain part of us that is constantly told, like, okay, you can numb that. Numb the pain, you know, or
right.
you don't have to think about it. It's not a big deal, because what are we told? Like, don't make waves. Be nice. Don't make it a big deal. Don't speak up, because that's going to be even harder to deal with.
Yeah.
Like, well, if it goes badly.
And like, that's where PTSD comes from, right?
Yeah.
It's yeah. ignoring the pain in the moment.
Absolutely.
So that it can come back later. So let's kind of fast forward to today.
Yeah.
Where we've had a year of that, mm-hmm. right? Like mm-hmm. a year of women saying, I've had enough of this, and very prominent figures
yeah.
in this industry
Yeah.
Both on and off screen, comedians and production people.
Yes, studio heads, actors, right. directors, you name it.
But I mean, and it's not just that it's coming out, it's that repercussions are starting to happen,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely, yeah.
What have you seen from the other side as far as like male behavior or what's changing? What isn't changing that might need to?
I've been having a lot more open conversations about this topic with male mm-hmm. friends and colleagues. I would say the majority of them have been really great. There's been instances where I have confided in them of, listen, this thing happened and it's not cool. And they, you know, will understand and talk about why it's not cool. They'll stand up for me, whatever, right? I feel like one of the best things that's happened with the Me Too movement is that it's been given an easier avenue for friends and coworkers to talk about this sort of thing.
Yeah.
Of course, though, I feel like because we're just kind of in the early stages of trying to navigate this brave new world that we're in, that also has led to a lot of like awkward comments that I've noticed from, you know, male coworkers in passing of, can I say that now? Like, is it cool? I would prefer that to just not having the awkwardness.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, at least we're having the conversations. And right. Of course it's going to be awkward because how are any of us supposed to know really what's the best way to go about a situation?
Well, the only way to learn anything is to ask questions.
Exactly.
And then accept the answer.
Yes. Right. Totally. Yeah. It's going to be a learning curve for both men and women. I think a really good example is kind of what happened with the whole Arrested Development interview that happened with Jason Bateman. A new season came out on Netflix.
Right.
And I don't know if you heard about kind of some of the allegations about Jeffrey Tambor. About how he just kind of, you know, was kind of a caustic personality to have on the set. But he made a female actress very uncomfortable and would scream at her and cry, you know, make her cry on the set or whatever. When they did the press for the new season of Arrested Development, the entire cast was there. And she brought it up. And she brought it up to him about how he made her very uncomfortable and it wasn't okay and she didn't feel okay about it, but he apologized to her and hopefully they can move forward. And she was getting very, very emotional while she was talking about this. Jason Bateman, to his credit, I do believe him when he says that he was trying to kind of suppress the awkwardness of it, but the way that he was saying it wasn't great of, well, you know, we're a family and in families, these things happen and, you know, we have to keep moving forward. I'm paraphrasing. I'm not
sure
doing it justice, but long story short, it didn't go over well.
I can't imagine anything close to that going well.
Exactly. Huge backlash online, you know, blah, blah, blah. He ended up apologizing for it because he realized really what he should have done in that moment rather than trying to make it better is just to listen,
right.
To listen to her concerns, not to just jump in immediately trying to make a situation better. And I do believe him when he says that what he was trying to do was diffuse a situation, but it didn't work.
Yeah.
And he apologized. And I feel like there are going to be more of those instances going forward. It's just kind of inevitable, right?
Until very recently,
uh-huh.
that was the role of like the dad. That was the middle-aged man's role in life, at home, at the store, in the office, anywhere. Our thing is like, everybody calm down. Yeah. A man is here to solve this.
Yes, yeah.
Take it easy.
Yeah.
I will fix everything. Yeah. I brought a hammer.
Yeah.
We'll
yes,
take
exactly.
care of this.
Exactly.
And that's just not where we're at anymore.
No. Like, first step, and I would love to hear your take on this and kind of like what your experiences have been. But I feel like right now, first step for men, just listen. Really. Just listen. And sit back and say, I am sorry. And say, I would love to hear your take on it and what has happened to you.
Absolutely. I mean, like, I don't even want to respond to that. Because I think that's exactly right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's kind of goes to my whole stance on like male feminism, where it's like, I think like it's great, but it's not ours.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to jump into every conversation.
Right.
You know what I mean? I could just, I can say, hey, I'm just here to listen.
Yeah.
You know, if you need me, I'll be over there.
Right.
Let me know.
Call. Yeah.
My name's Daniel.
Yeah.
Give me a wave and I'll come in. What else is changing? What else have you noticed?
I definitely feel like there has been more of a push across all the different studios and the different, you know, agencies and production companies to have more open conversations about harassment, have more channels for people to report.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's kind of the first step, is to kind of figure out what the new rules are for the new normal. I think the other step next to that is trying to figure out what it means to have some of those men come back into society or the workforce. For an example, like an Aziz Ansari or a Louis C.K., which is very relevant in your world.
Yeah.
And those are really, really big questions. Obviously, the serial offenders will be dealt with in the court of law or, you know, whatever. But what about the ones who aren't? What about the ones who have apologized? What about the ones, you know, who there is ostensibly maybe a route to come back? What does that route look like?
Sure.
And I don't have the answer to that. I don't think anyone does now. But I personally feel like that is a really important next step of what happens next with some of these men. Because are we really actually fixing the problem if the only response we have is, well, we need to get rid of this person? For a lot of men, that is the answer.
I agree.
You know, you need to get rid of that person. That person is a horrible human being. But in that weird world of the shades of gray or whatever, are we really fixing the problem if that's the only response?
I'm an alcoholic, right? Like I'm sober now, and and I think that some of this stuff is similar to that. There is sexual addiction. If people start taking steps towards recovery in that direction, that maybe we could have a point where it's like, okay, we can talk about a future. But if people aren't, and I don't think it's enough to say I'm sorry.
No,
right? I think one has to demonstrate.
Oh, absolutely.
A course of action.
Yeah. But what does that course of action look like?
I have no idea.
I don't think there's really an answer for that. Yeah. And I think Louis C.K. is a perfect example of he has openly talked about how, yes, I have done this and I am not going to deny all these terrible things I have done.
What kind of resistance, I guess, are you seeing? I mean, obviously, you mentioned snide remarks and things like that.
Yeah.
But are we seeing people that are like obviously pushing back? Are we seeing people who are acting scared now? You know, hashtag me next,
right?
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What are we seeing on that front?
The biggest negative aspect that has come out of this is the amount of support that also comes out with all of these men, which we're seeing now actually with everything that's happening with the whole Brett Kavanaugh, Dr. Christine Blasey Ford thing that's happening, which is for, you know, every three people that are coming out in support of Dr. Ford or whatever, saying, I believe her, there is always that one person of, well, I never saw it.
Sure.
Which is all, to me, is also a hilarious defense. Well, clearly, if I, this one person, if he's never acted that way to me, that means he's never acted that way to anyone.
Right.
It couldn't possibly happen.
Right.
That has happened a lot. There's so many other layers of that, of, privilege and how these kinds of men interact with different kinds of women that they are very aware of the fact that this woman has more power over him or is on the same level compared to a woman like a PA. I would say that that's kind of been the biggest resistance or backlash of the amount of very vehement defense that has come out.
Is there anything we haven't talked about that you wanted to talk about?
I would actually love to hear your response of like, what you think kind of men should be doing. What have your interactions been kind of having these conversations and kind of figuring out what's the best way as an ally?
Yeah, I think the number one thing is like you said before, just kind of sitting back for a minute. You know what I mean? Maybe 10 minutes, you know what I mean? Maybe a while.
Exactly.
Maybe like 9 months or whatever Louis C.K. did. You know, and that's one of the reasons we started the show Fine and Dandy, was kind of like straight white privileged men in show business or whatever, trying to do a thing where we were taking our platform and our privilege and using it to step back and listen to other people's opinions. One of the problems we obviously had, which is my second point, is that my co-host Andy really liked to do, what do they call it? Story stealing.
Uh-huh.
Where like somebody tells a story and then he goes, oh, I get, let me tell you, one time I did
this. Oh, yeah.
And we need to stop doing that. I think if we can listen more and stop trying to identify verbally, like it's great to have a feeling where you're like, I'm starting to understand where you're coming from because I've had an experience that in no way is the same as yours.
Yeah.
But I've had an experience that I can kind of piece together what yours might feel like based on like a certain level of amplification, because I'm pretty confident that almost no experience that I've ever had is on the same level as anyone of color, anyone who is not a man, you know, anyone who is not cisgendered, mm-hmm. anyone who is not heterosexual, like, the path that I have gotten in life is minimal resistance from anything. And yeah. so trying to, like, audibly mm-hmm. identify with people, I think, is kind of gross.
Yeah.
All it's doing is it's making us the star of a new play.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? We've mm-hmm. always been the star of every show, and now we're trying to be the star of the woke show. You know?
You're still trying to white knight it. Literally white knight it
right,
into
exactly.
a situation.
Yeah. If we're really, truly trying to make progress, then we really, truly need to mean it.
Mm-hmm.
And that means sharing the stage.
Yeah.
Man, that's hard for a lot of guys. I hate when guys devil's advocate shit, but mm-hmm. like at the same time, I think it's important to, as we're sitting back and being quiet, try to still be inquisitive.
Yes.
Mild participation.
Yes, that's a very good point.
Yeah.
That's a very, very good point.
Because, like, how else are we going to learn? How else yeah. are we going to get past that place of just, like, these bitches
yeah.
are just nagging on everything.
Yeah. Oh, there they are again on their daily feminist rant. It's 2 p.m.
Yeah. And I feel like that's something that is happening a lot in the industry, is that people go, like, okay, we gave these broads their moment.
Yes.
Now we're going to just, like, slide right back into what was
yeah.
going on before.
Yeah.
We got Wonder Woman in the picture.
Exactly.
What are you mad at?
Whoa, we're done.
Yeah,
there we go.
You got it.
We're done for the next 10 years yeah. or whatever.
Even Stevens.
Yeah.
No problem. Hey, it's like it never happened.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like the Emmy skit that came out for the introduction, where there was one skit that they had in the very beginning where they do kind of poke fun at that
mm-hmm.
of the self-congratulatory nature that Hollywood has, where it's like, oh, well, we finally nominated a female director, so look at us. Look how great we're doing. And
nice.
Look, we have one male actor nominee who is not white. Oh, I mean, this is progress.
It's like the last 100 years never happened.
Exactly, exactly. And every time I hear that, I'm always thinking, you do realize that's one step out of 1,000. Like, it's not.
How far do you think we need to go?
I would love to see the entertainment industry more closely reflect what society actually looks like, especially in a city as diverse as LA. That is what I feel like would be a place to strive towards. Not necessarily like going halfway or going, you know, from 1 to 1,000. It's, can we just make it a little bit more reflective of what actual society looks like?
Listening back to Steph, the thing that was really sticking out was when she was talking about men listening, and I have been thinking about this a lot. And this not only comes up on this podcast again and again and again, I feel like the past year, since, you know, all this Harvey Weinstein stuff happened, and, you know, women have been, like, really angry, and there's been all this, like, rage happening. That's the thing that women talk about again and again, about, like, wanting men to listen, men, you should just listen. But when we spoke to Kasia Urbaniak 2 weeks ago, the former Taoist nun, former dominatrix, and she was saying that she thinks it's bullshit when women say that. And I kind of think she's right, because I found this past year, like, when men just sit there and listen, it is kind of annoying, because it's like, wait, why aren't you, like, reacting? Why aren't you saying anything? Why aren't you implementing something? I don't know. Yeah.
What if I just sat here? How funny would that be after you did that?
No, exactly, exactly. You know, like, you being silent for several seconds.
Yeah.
I'm just like, wait, why is he not saying anything? Why
is
he not engaging?
Well, so what are we supposed to do, right? You were saying earlier that there's probably a lot of mixed messages.
Do you feel
out there
that
right now? And this is one of them, right?
Yeah.
It's like step back and listen. It's our turn, right? And then it's like, well, are you going to just stand there, or are you going to do something?
Yeah. And I think this is confusing for men, and I don't want to talk on behalf of all women, though I'm going to do that now.
That's your job on this show.
No, the job is that, like, you talk on behalf of all men, and I talk on behalf just of me. So we reverse the roles. We reverse the roles that usually happen in society. But I have been thinking, because since Kasia said that, I'm like, she's actually right. I don't think we just want people to listen. And I think the men who have been most important in my life have been ones who have engaged, and they have grappled. Not in a sort of like, oh, I'm going to be all like devil's advocate and debatey with you for the sake of it, but more like, okay, I actually want to be helpful, so I'm going to get stuck in and get involved. And I think personally, I have less of a problem with someone maybe messing up, maybe saying something slightly hurtful, but they're making an effort. I don't have a problem with someone doing that.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't have a problem with someone maybe saying the wrong thing or being a bit clumsy, but they're making an effort. Whereas right. like the listening thing, it makes me think, well, this just sounds like every like passive aggressive nice guy I know who just sits there and listens and nods and then goes off and does whatever the hell they want.
Yeah.
But they, you know, but they've done it in a nice way and they've sat there and listened. Yeah.
Done it in a nice way, meaning they haven't done anything.
Right.
Done it is a very strange thing to say for someone who sat quietly.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. No, exactly. Exactly. A while ago, we spoke to Jackson Katz, who is a brilliant author and educator, and he has a fantastic TED talk, which is about violence against women and how it's that's a men's problem. And when we spoke to him, he was talking about how, like, sometimes he'll speak to men who'll say that they said something at a conference and some woman got upset at them and they're never going to say anything again. And his response, and he's quite cool, he's quite a dude and stuff. He said something like, if it just takes one comment from someone to shut you down, I question your commitment to the cause, which I thought was pretty cool. But he made a really good point that, you know, he was saying to men that, like, it's okay to make mistakes. No one expects that you're going to be perfect and you're going to know how to be a great ally off the bat. But it's important to get stuck in rather than to, like, you know, sit on the sideline or give up. But I think this sort of, like, we just want men to listen is kind of like a similar thing. I have really been questioning that the past few weeks.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with you. I think it's like Kasia said, where it was like you can ask for things in, like, too nice of a way.
Right.
To not actually get what you want. Do you know what I mean? Like, you can ask for 40% of what you want instead of just saying, this is what I need.
Right.
And I think that's what we just want you to listen is. It's a compromise before the ask.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where it's like I want all of this, but I feel like that's too much to ask for. So I'm going to compromise with myself before
right.
I even say anything out loud.
Yeah, no. That is interesting. So maybe it's a sense of, like, women need to not compromise at all at first and fully say to men that, like, you know, I want you on board. And I want you to get engaged.
Well, I think...
Because are you guys finding it confusing right now? I'm wondering, especially, like, you know, you are across a lot of these discussions and you're very much involved, given that you have your own podcast and you're doing this podcast now as well. Do you think we women are saying, like, really contradictory things to you guys?
Well, yeah, but that's not new. Right? Like, that's not anything that hasn't been happening for way longer than I've been alive.
No,
women say contradictory things. Everyone says contradictory things.
I know, but in this moment in time where, like, guys like you are trying to be allies and stuff, are you just like, oh my God, what do they want? Like, none of this makes sense.
I don't think so, no. I mean, I think it's pretty obvious what people want. They want harm reduction more than anything, right?
Right.
And I think that's where please just listen is coming from.
Mm-hmm.
It's harm reduction.
Mm-hmm.
Right, we don't need men overnight to be white knights or whatever, but we need them to at least stop breaking shit.
Right.
That's, like, the biggest part of, like, any recovery program, right? It's like, see the problem and stop doing it, and then we can work on getting better.
Right.
And so I don't think that's contradictory information. I think that's just step one.
The other thing I wanted to point to was you and Steph talked about what do we do about men like Louis C.K. And actually we had an episode in season 3 where Jonathan Freeman, our previous co-host, he and I chatted to Stephanie Bartnick from Unorthodox. And it was about this discussion of all these men who want to make comebacks. What do we do? And we were kind of like, all of them should go away. We're like, we don't need, like, new TV shows from, like, Charlie Rose and whatever. But yeah, it was interesting when that came up again with people like Louis C.K. and stuff, because I feel like the other thing that's really important at this moment in time is I think apologies aren't enough. And
yeah.
I hear this, especially, like, you know, I hear this from guys I know who are like, oh, I did something shitty to someone, so I went and like apologized. And I'm kind of like, you need to do more than that. It's not just like, I apologize and now, like, you feel a little bit better that you're a quote-unquote good guy. Do you know what I mean? It's like...
yeah.
Because that's what I think sometimes apologies are. I think apologies can be extremely self-serving.
But, yeah, see...
It's like, you
I,
need to
I
show
wa-
action. Like, I'm really sorry I did that. It was a crappy thing to do. Is there a way I can try to make it better for you? These are ways in which I'm trying to work on myself to ensure that I don't treat anyone else in that way. What would you like me to do at this moment in time?
Yeah, that's good stuff.
Do you know what I mean? And I feel like there's people like, I don't know, there's actually one person in my past, I didn't assault them or anything, but it was a friend I treated badly, and often I feel like giving her an apology, and I do wonder, like, I'd kind of grapple with myself, because I'm like, yeah, but is that just to make me feel better about the fact that I did something shitty? Do you know what I mean?
I have a lot of opinions on this. I've done a lot of those.
Okay.
I've done a lot of the seeking out old, you know, bad things that I've done and trying to make them better, because I think, first off, I don't think saying I'm sorry is enough.
Yeah.
But I think it should be respected at some level, because pride is sometimes like the hardest thing for people.
Yeah, but sometimes people make apologies to make themselves look good and be like, okay, cool, now that's out
right,
of the way. I can
right,
just
right,
continue
right, right,
doing
right.
what I was
and,
doing before.
And I'm not saying that that's a good thing. I'm saying on some level, apologies should be respected, because for some people, like, saying I'm sorry is like the hardest thing in the world for them.
Well, I think it's
and that's
it's the
and
start.
That's miserable.
Yeah, but it's
and yeah,
the start.
It is a start. And I'm not saying it's an end. I'm just saying it should be respected.
Sure.
To an extent.
Right.
And again, I'm not trying to like make excuses for anyone, because I don't think that 10% is ever good enough on anything.
Right.
And that's what an apology is, right? It's like
10%.
Right. It's like showing your face again and going, "Hey, sorry." But if we don't take any sort of action after that to show that we've learned a lesson,
yeah,
right, because that's what it's about. It's about learning a lesson.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's one of the things that makes going back through my past and reaching out to people and demonstrating humility and saying like, hey, I'm trying to change and I feel really bad about X, Y, or Z. What can I do to make that up to you? If anything, because, you know, they might just tell me fuck off and never talk to me again. And that's fair.
That's fine. Exactly. At least they've gotten to say their thing as well.
Right.
Yeah.
Totally. And but what that does is it takes it so much further than like saving face with I'm
yeah,
sorry. And,
exactly.
it, and it puts me in a place where I don't like the way I feel
mm-hmm.
when I'm in that moment of like self-correction.
And that's important.
It's gross.
That's important.
Right.
Though.
And that's
yeah.
that's where we learn the
yeah.
most
yeah.
about who we are and who we want to be. Is like that place of just the bottom of the pit.
Yeah. And so this is the thing, taking this back to the conversation with Steph, because I feel like these people like Louis C.K. and whatever, I mean, like she said, some people just need to go away because it's like, that's just incomprehensible. But other people, I feel like, yeah, it's not enough to just be like, here's a public apology and now here's my stand-up show. It's like, well,
no,
what
I want
you
to do is show me, I want you to show me
that you are
like
in
a
rehab.
I want a court slip. That shows
yeah,
me that you have
yeah.
been to a treatment facility and that you will have your 90-day chip from Sex and Love Anonymous.
No, I'm with you. So I feel like those guys who aren't Harvey Weinsteins, but they're not great, it's like, okay, cool, give an apology and also demonstrate to all of us what you're doing to show that, A, you understand the gravity of it and you're doing something to make sure it doesn't happen again. And I
yeah.
feel like that way you can eventually start to come back.
The thing is, nobody ever, for the most part, people aren't going to make an actual change in, like, their core without having everything in life taken from
exactly.
them.
Exactly. That's the thing. This is the other thing of people need to hit rock bottom, right? So this thing
right.
of, like, oh, this person did something bad. I feel sorry for them. Let's protect them. It's like, no, you're actually not helping them. And I say this from
yeah.
experience. It's kind of like when I've really come close to messing up badly, that is an incentive to be like, you know what? I need to do some serious work.
Yeah. The best thing that ever happened to me was that everybody I knew told me to leave them alone.
Yeah. And then there's only one way, and that's up or out.
Right. Here we are.
Up or
five
out.
And a half years later, nailing it.
So I feel like maybe that's the conclusion for, like, what about guys, and maybe even guys who are listening who are thinking, oh, I've treated women badly. You know, given the past year in the conversation, there might be guys listening who are thinking, I've treated women badly. What should I do? My personal opinion is to go away, reflect on it, feel bad. Like, it's important to actually feel bad. And if you're going to give an apology to that person, back it up with action. Listen
yeah.
to them. See what they want you to do. And yeah, take some action. Don't just, like, you know, think some, like, you know, half-assed apology is the way to do it. But I do think
yeah.
feeling bad is important. So don't worry about feeling bad. Like, feeling bad is a good sign, I think, because it means that
well,
you're going to improve.
It means you have feelings.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It means you're not a sociopath, right?
Right. Yeah. But I say just own up to it. Take your lumps, man. Enjoy the consequences, because that means that you're heading in the right direction. The consequences are temporary. You know what I mean? Like, no one can destroy your life every day forever. It's going to hurt for a minute, and then things will change, and you'll be a better person. And frankly, we're all going to die eventually, and none of this matters. And on that happy note, we're going to call it. We heard from Steph, a Hollywood insider. My name is Daniel. That's Naz.
Big thanks to our co-producers, Sam Baker and Jonathan Blackwell. We're going to be back next week with more.